The following podcast features topics discussed by geeks or under the supervision of nerds. Accordingly, Geek Life and its producers must insist that no one attempt to recreate or reenact any of the topics or bad impressions performed on this show.
All right. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Geek Life HQ. I'm Justin with an E.
Justin with an I.
I'm Matt.
And today we have a special guest, Bill Diamond. Everybody say hello to Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, how are you?
That was quite the introduction there, Justin. So, Bill, we have you. Yeah. You are the producer of such movies as Z Dead End, Talking with the Dead, the Talking with the Dead series. I have the one that I know is coming out now. Next is Smoked Out. And then Aurora Monsters, the model craze that gripped the world, and the Phantom of the Opera, Unmasking of the
Masterpiece.
Yeah. So just to kind of give the audience a little idea of who you are and why you're kind of in our sphere and all that. You got some pretty big accomplishments here, man.
Well, yeah, thanks. I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah, I was super excited by that one in particular, the Aurora Monsters about the model kits. Yeah. That's so geeky. And I just that like hits me right in the feels, man. I know, Matt, I think you sell a couple of those, didn't you? Like some vintage model kits and such?
I have, yeah. I came across a lot of like all these old airplanes.
Oh,
all like new in box and everything. And I got them for cheap enough and they move pretty quick on eBay.
Yeah. We did that. Oh, geez, long time ago. But Aurora 2 has been always on hold. We recorded and filmed Aurora 2, but we just never put it out yet. So there was a second part because that the company started in its late 50s, really wrapped up in its 60s, and then it went into the 70s before it, you know, went under, I guess, around the 80s. So there was a second part because we just covered the vintage monsters all the way up to probably right before they started releasing like Lost in Space, Land of the Giants, all that other stuff.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun stuff.
Yeah, there was another 70 craze, which we recorded. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that we did record are, and we still have that, have passed away. So.
Oh, wow.
We'll release it at some point.
Now, what's the deal with Z Dead End? So I saw it's in post-production, and I noticed that there's a star-studded cast on this, including George Lazenby. Is this the George Lazenby?
Yeah, Bond.
Wow.
Yes. Z Dead End is in its second part because it all takes place during 4th of July. We filmed last year a number of weekends, and of course, They were going to decide whether they were going to shoot the other half in California or they were going to do here. And since what I call the world went crazy, yeah, they felt it was easier for them to just focus and do the rest of it here in New York, here at the studio. So they had the kind of one, they went back into refunding promotions and they went in to do a new trailer and then they'll come back here probably somewhere in probably April, May, because the whole movie takes place around the 4th of July weekend. So they need the weather to come back.
Gotcha.
To be able to continue filming.
Well, that makes sense, especially if you're in New York, because yeah. I mean, we're in Illinois and Matt's in Texas and I've got like a foot of snow outside. So, you know.
Yeah, well, the film doesn't take place in New York. It takes place out west. Colorado or that area, or probably even more Arizona, that type of area. It doesn't have exactly the point, but it's supposed to be on the West Coast. So, but it was all filmed here, most of the internals. So it's just easier for them to refocus and keep the production close. A lot of the actors were from LA, but they were working out here anyway.
Oh, okay.
So with everything that was going on, they just regrouped and thought it would just be better to finish it off in New York.
How do you get involved in producing something like this?
Well, I know Rob, who directed and wrote it. he had actually, we met at a convention at Monsterpalooza a long time ago. A lot of times, because we have such a large facility here, a lot of times they get, he actually was here for another production. I wasn't here the time he came, and we were doing backgrounds stuff for the documentary Spookies. And he came into the studio with Ben Baisley, and we had met, but he's never been here. And when he was here, he's like, oh, wow, could I shoot? Do you think I could shoot that film here? And then he got back. He came here. I happened to be out of town. And when he called me up, I said, yeah, let's talk. And that's how that started. So a lot of times when I'm kicking off a production, and because we have the sound studios here, a lot of times if they're independents, I'll, you know, work with them a little bit more and probably oversee it. So that's how I get involved.
That's great. I was, hey guys, did you have any questions? Because I know that we had talked before about things like lights and cinematography or anything like that, which Bill definitely has those pedigree. Anything you want to ask him about specific movie production?
With the movie being split up like a year of filming, how hard is that going to be to match like certain shots if you have to like reshoot like a certain scene that was already shot? I mean,
well, one of the things we do here is their sets are still up.
Okay.
We do that with Tolkien too.
Oh, gotcha. There's,
some of their sets are still in place. So we don't really take them down until we know a production's finished.
Okay.
We very rarely, we have the capability of having so much space that we will either shoot on that set and keep props and everything there. If we're shooting something else that comes in, say a commercial comes in, they need that office space. We just kind of pull it out, keep the walls up, and then put it right back.
Gotcha.
If that's the case. We have standing sets here. We have Z Dead End sets up. We have Token sets up. We have all the Monster TV sets up. So we can shoot pretty much anywhere on the property and still have their primary ones they use the most still up.
Nice.
That helps.
I got a question not related to production, but what got you into the horror genre? Because it seems like you love the horror genre the most. So,
well, I've always been involved with it. You know, it's funny because even though I do the puppets, a lot of them are monsters anyway. So I was always a fan of the horror, the classic movies. I grew up with them. I'm a product of that, you know, Zachary Cool Ghoul time because I grew up then. And Chiller Theater, Dark Shadows, and all that was.
Oh yeah, Christopher Lee.
We used to run home at 4:30 just to see Dark Shadows. So I was like, so I was around it all the time, and I just wound up having to do more and more of it. And then in the 90s, I was pretty much working with most of the families in the horror films anyway: Karloff, Chaney, Lugosi. Mm. Basil Gogos, all those guys. But I started, one of the first conventions I did was, I was very involved with Famous Monster magazine. Mm-hmm. And one of the first conventions was 1975 that I did. And I was there with Peter Cushing.
Oh, wow.
So I was like his handler at that time. And then another cinematographer and great director, Sam, was with Inga Pitt. And so I knew Forry Ackerman. And so once you were kind of all in that, Sam Irving was all in that, and Cortland Hull, who is the head of the Witch's Dungeon, he created that in 1966. And he's the great nephew to Henry Hull, the first werewolf in 1935.
Oh, wow.
And I'm the president of that museum.
Oh, nice.
So I've kind of been around it forever.
What's the since you have access to all this, what's the crown jewel piece of your collection then? What's that that one thing that you could say it's like, hey, I got bragging rights on this one?
That's a tough one.
I'll give you a good example. So we just had Dana Gould on the show, right? And he showed us that he had a piece from the original Plan 9 from outer space. He had one of the original ships.
Oh, all right. There. I have from the Hensons, I have one of the four original puppets that Jim did at the Ed Sullivan Show in 1968.
Holy crap.
Awesome. Wow. Justin just got excited. He's like, tell me more.
No, I'm like the biggest Jim Henson guy. So, you know, you can't see I've got a huge collection of Dark Crystal stuff. So, that's great.
I got a couple of things from Dark Crystal here, too, like the sword.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's like my life dream to just touch that stuff and just be like, oh wow. Yeah.
Just gonna be like, where's it stored?
The sword is here. It was the original plate, and Johnny Henson and I kind of restored it back. And then I had both original swords from Dark Crystal, which are in the museum, because Johnny brought them down here for me to restore them. So I restored them. I've got a gremlin from
an original. That's awesome. Gremlin.
That's awesome.
Are they holding up well, the gremlins? The
gremlin I got to restore. Rick Baker originally made it for movie 2. And it's Mark Dodson did the voice for it. Mark's an old friend of mine. And he does all the stuff on Token Dead 2 now.
Oh, nice.
He does all the zombie sounds and everything. And that's Daffy is the gremlin.
Is he the one with the funny face that's kind of like yellow and green? Yeah.
Oh my God,
that's so cool.
You take it to shows. I don't know if you look behind me, you see that Herman Munster up in the corner?
I was going to ask what was up there because I see the...
That's a Herman Munster that Dick Smith put together. Dick Smith is, you know, he did the makeup for Exorcist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we have, at the museum, we have an original Exorcist head.
Oh, wow.
There were two. One is in the moving image and the other one's in our museum. We have a original E.T. that was in the bicycle scene for the long shots.
Oh, that's neat.
Have a Indiana Jones piece from the Temple of Doom stuff.
I do like Temple of Doom. We have
a lot of original stuff here.
Now, are you still watching horror movies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I keep on the classics now and then. And then I watch, you know, newer stuff when I get around to. A lot of times when we're working here in the studios and buildings thing, we'll slap some stuff up onto the monitors while we're working.
Yeah, how do you feel about the newer reboots of horror movies that they're doing?
You know, a lot of them are good. You know, I think it helps a new generation and then they want to go back and see the originals.
Yeah.
You know, I would say like, and it's not even a new one, when they redid The Thing, which is Carpenter's thing.
Oh, yeah, the 2010 one or?
Yeah, that one, you know, was a great one, but it has nothing to do with the one in the 50s. So.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of stuff here. I mean, there's a lot in my office here. There's stuff all over the place.
Yeah, I can imagine, man. That sounds like a dream, you know.
If it was video, I'd give you a tour.
Well, don't worry. As soon as you said you got Jim Henson stuff, Justin's going to be writing you. What's your address? Where exactly are you located? What hours are you not there?
We have a number of Fraggles. We have some Fraggles here. We have.
Do you really?
Yeah,
well, like, honey, we're doing the honeymoon there.
Yeah, that's.
I worked on Fraggle Rock.
Are you kidding me? I actually just picked up this book, Fraggle Rock, The Ultimate History. So, and I worked
for Jim on that time, not when they were shooting in Canada. I worked for Jim. I also worked on Dark Crystal for him at his studios in New York.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And I mean, that's where everything started. It was in New York during a snowstorm when he was talking to his daughter, Cheryl. And we always heard about this because I'm from Connecticut originally. I heard about the blizzard of 78, you know, where it's like everything was closed down and there was 10 feet of snow drift and you had to get out through the roof, like all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and that's what influenced this because they had that time set aside where, well, we can't go anywhere, so we may as well get to work. That's how we got it.
To trap Jim. I mean, I worked with Jim. I knew Jim for you know, good 11 years I knew him, and Johnny Henson and I knew each other as long. And so I was very involved with what Johnny was doing. And then I would work now and then in the New York office down in New York for Jim. I did a lot of like all offline editing for some for Dark Crystal, some for Fraggle Rock, some for special events and things like that, which actually, you know, you guys can see me, they can't, but let's see.
This interview is taking a really interesting turn for me. Sorry, guys. I'm like, I love everything he's talking about.
This is an original Betacam tape from 1983 of Jim. With it is the Macy's Day Parade '83 and Fraggle Rock, Kermit and the Balloons.
Wow, nice. So that's when they had the gobo balloon.
Right. Yeah, and I have some original balloons that are from the Henson offices from New York, because I worked on that with Johnny Henson and John Kahn.
Oh, wow. That's so great. So do you do a lot of special effects then for these films?
Well, we do the special effects, but we have over 250 puppets here.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, we're building stuff all the time. We have Audrey Tu from Little Shop because I created it for the tour.
Nice.
I've been doing that plan for 35 years. And we have a special effects department. We have a scenic department. We have our editing departments, our sound stages, pretty much everything's here. Back a lot.
That's crazy.
Okay.
Going back to Audrey too, I didn't realize that was filmed the same time as Aliens. You know, yeah. It was like on the sound stage right across in London.
Yeah, I did the stage show. Not the movie.
It's okay. It's still amazing. I mean, I just like I just like that bit of trivia.
And usually, when they come and see us at the Comic Cons, we have Audrey with us.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
So you actually get in there and you manipulate it and make it eat people and stuff.
Yeah, I've been doing it since 1984.
Oh, wow, that's awesome.
What like puppet or prop are you most proud of? Like, what's the one that you're like, that's the best?
Well, when they ask about puppets, I can't say that because they're all listening and they get really pissed off.
So Annabelle's the answer.
Kermit's around the corner and Gorgo's down there and Stuffy's on the other side. So they really get annoyed.
Jeez, I was just thinking, do you have, what was his, Jim's first thing? It was like the Land of Snorch or something like that. Like the one he was doing on Saturday Night Live?
No, that was the... You're talking about...
Is it Gorge or something?
Yeah, Land of Gord. The Gord. That was only from 74 to 76.
It was like the least popular thing he ever did.
Yeah, that wasn't his first thing. His first thing goes all the way back to Sam and Friends, which was in the... you know, late 50s and the commercials, Wilkins Coffee and all that other stuff. But that was, if you want to find anything that would kind of reminisce Dark Crystal, that's probably their first attempts.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah. I love all the little, like the little minutia that they have, like, oh, this is a butterfly, but it turns into something that's going to eat something else. It's pretty crazy. So
they did a lot of that based on stuff that they did on, the Ed Sullivan Show, because they did like 27 different things on the Ed Sullivan Show.
That's funny too, because I always, whenever I've seen Ed Sullivan like himself, I always thought he was just so dry, and I wondered, I'm like, maybe he just has this sort of mass appeal, because he was always, it seemed like, upstaged by his guests, which is not something that you saw with like Johnny Carson and all that. But I don't know, no, just
before Carson, so you know,
the Jack Parr era of the Tonight Show. And
yeah, he, you know, his show was the biggest and most powerful of that time period. So you wind up on that, talking like the Beatles, you wind up on that show. That's what catapulted Jim worldwide. And that also gave the people who did Sesame Street, you know, made Jim be aware of what was out there, what they were aware of him because of that. I mean, he did... shows before that, where, and Kermit wasn't the most famous one at that time period. Before that, it was probably Ralph the Dog was the most famous in the 60s.
No, I didn't know that.
He did the Jimmy Dean shows, which were before Ed Sullivan. And the Jimmy Dean shows were like early 60s.
Is that the sausage guy, Jimmy Dean?
No.
I'm in Chicago. Everything's about sausage out here.
We do a lot of our sausage. Boy sausage, yeah. Bratwurst.
You know, so I wanted to ask you about cinematography because it seems to be something that comes up a lot of times when we review movies. Can you tell when a movie has bad cinematography? Can you tell what has exceptional cinematography? What's kind of your perspective as someone who has experience with it?
Well, I think there's two sides of it. When you have a really good lighting designer and you have a really good cinematographer and they work well together, then you have a really, really great product. You could have great lighting and bad photography, but if you have both of those things, outside of, you hope you have a great story, because everything starts with a story, that you could watch movies and just shut the sound off. Then you know you've got a really good film. If you can, I mean, that was the great thing about silent movies, because this is what brought you in, was that at that time period, for example, Nosferatu is 100 years old this year.
You guys have seen that, I imagine.
Oh, yeah.
That's was in it.
Yeah, we just re-released it. We did a remastered it. And Mark from Blitzkid, he redid a beautiful soundtrack for it. So they can get that on there. But there you go. That shows you where cinematography, I mean, that's 100 years ago, but that shows you really how that works. If you can shut the sound off and watch a really great film, and really love the cinematography, then, you know, there were movies like Dr. Zhivago. Now, I was a Dr. Zhivago fan, but the cinematography was phenomenal. So,
not a fan of the music?
Right. It's not one of my favorite musicals, but yeah. The cinematography was fantastic. You know, same thing with probably, if you go to musicals, you get like Sound of Music, of course, and many other things that were like, do it with Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings, you know.
Well, they're even doing that now where if you go to see a symphony orchestra do this in person, they're just showing the cinematography. They're just showing the background scenes and all that. And it's brilliant.
It is, especially, you know, when it was, you know, helicopters, and now we have drones. You know, that, and I did cinematography in helicopters. It wasn't easy. You know, drones kind of make it a little bit easier, and that's a whole different craft all by itself. But, you know, I do camera cranes. I've learned to use Steadicam when it first came out by Garrett Brown. I used to, what they called at that time was a Model 2. It was right after The Shining. So those things, the fluish motion, the shots, the things that kind of bring out the film. Again, Alfred Hitchcock was a master at that type of stuff. That's what makes a good film.
Do you think like advancements in technology have helped lower budget movies become more, look more like a higher budget movie, and, you know, give people with lower budgets a better chance to make a better product?
It depends on the production value. If you have really good production value, whether it's costuming, great makeup, good cinematographer, great lighting, and you enjoy it visually, you know, I always tell everybody, shut the sound off, watch it first or second after you've seen it. And if you still enjoy it.
You could just be watching The Matrix with the sound off and it will be fantastic and you'll actually like it.
Well, there is no liking the last one.
Matrix is a lot of special effects. So, you know, if you're, the cinematography is important, but then all the digital artwork and the elements are in there is what really sells that kind of film.
Yeah, it's not like a Western, and I mean, Justin and I love Western, so that's like the star of the show usually, or like an extra character is you have, you know, your Western sort of setting, you know, whereas like with something like The Matrix, of course, you don't have that, you know. But I don't know, I just noticed this on like when we're watching movies from like a certain creator, like maybe I was watching The Cry Macho. Right. I didn't really care for the story in Cry Macho, but Clint Eastwood always has spot on cinematography. And it's just like to you, to your point, I would watch that on mute because it's just gorgeous.
Absolutely. And again, you know, everybody gets some independent people. Well, they've got to have these great cameras. Well, that helps, or cameras with lenses. But if it's designed well, you know, I always told people, no matter what, whether it was this 70s, 80s, 90s, whatever, you can't tell me what that camera, what it was shot with. You know,
I mean, look at Dolomite. I mean,
if you're looking at it from, hey, wow, I had it red, you know, great. Well, if you don't know how to use it, you don't know how to light it.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you got. You know, so the point is you can do really great stuff with very, very lower equipment if it is shot well, if it's well thought out, if it's well lit. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean the tools have to be the high end. It depends on if the production value is. Yeah. And a lot of people get wrapped around equipment, and that's not necessarily, if you have it, great, use it. But if you don't, your film shouldn't be dependent on, well, oh, I got to go get a red or I'm not going to be accepted. If that's the case, then why film it?
That's a good point.
Nice. Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Justin.
You know, because it really should be about the storytelling. It really should be about, you know, what do you want to achieve here? Now, like on Token, yes, we have really great stuff to work with, but we're playing with something that's a comic book and we're trying to make it look like an 80s film because it's a fun B film and that's what we're doing. We're going after what's in the comic book and how the feel of the story and tell the story, the way the guys wrote it and what they want to get across. It doesn't necessarily have to be, well, you know, we're doing it because we got, you know, a $60,000 camera over a, you know, $100 camera. It should make the difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It helps, but it doesn't. Focus and can't change the lenses. But you know, again, you know, it depends on the storytelling and the quality and the production value and the thought behind it. Because if you just base it on that, it's, if you have it, use it. If you don't have it, then improve every place else.
I like it. You know, I'm a fan of the Still Token, and those guys are hilarious. You know, they do a great job, and it's got to help to have the writers, you know, right there. So, you know, that makes sense for anything you have to do.
Now, they told me not to be nice to them, so I'm not going to be.
That's totally fine.
When Jeff and Ben in the room, I've got to improve everything.
Now, when because they don't give you a hard time, I'm sure. Right.
Right now, actually, I'm going through their new comic book came out, 5. And so we've shot some of 3. So I'm taking 3, 4, and 5 and working it out right now. So we can all be shot roughly together, like you would a film, and then split it up later on. Okay. The original idea was to break it up so it's almost like little chapters, you know, almost like the old Buck Rogers series.
Yeah.
So it kind of becomes fun, just like the comic book. You know, it's broken up like the comic book is. We kind of try to improve it or change. We don't totally follow the comic book because there's not enough content in that comic book to, you know, if you follow, but if you use it loosely as a storyboard and then improve on it, it's great. And we don't lock them into a running script either, because you want the natural thing. Jeff and Ben have known each other for a very, very, very long time. And when you have that, it's almost like Abbott and Costello.
Yeah, it is.
People have worked together for so long, they know each other. If you try to put words in their mouth, it's not going to work. If you give them a point A and B, and since they wrote and they know the material, you kind of let them go and say, okay, this works. Well, try it this way, guys, or try it that way. It doesn't necessarily have to be a hard script for them. It's not that way in the comic book. So we don't lock them down that way. You have to know the material that you're working with different, and it's definitely different between that and, you know, something like Z Dead End, where it's very script based, where this one's not. It doesn't have to be. It's not supposed to be.
Nice.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I'm excited to take a look and see what's going on with that, and especially Z Dead End, because I've always been a George Lazenby fan. So, I mean, I'm also a Roger Moore fan, but, you know, I don't know. I just think it's cool to see him. I didn't realize that he was still in the game, still acting.
Oh, yeah, he's still doing stuff. He does little things here and there, I guess, you know.
Apparently, I'm not a big George Lazenby fan as I thought I was. So, to go back and check his account. Don't tell him I said that. So.
He's going to revoke your membership card.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, remember that one Bond film? So, you know. But he was good, man. I mean, he killed someone on a bobsled. You know, it was a good time. So it was fun. Let's see. So I was also going to ask, because it looks like you're the guy that seems to know everybody. I was going to ask, do you have like a really good con story that kind of sticks out? Maybe someone that you met that was like unexpectedly like fun, or just like something from your days of work. And since you said 1975 at cons.
Oh yeah. Wow. Well, I think there's a, and Richard Dreyfuss is a great guy. So I'm going to give you a Richard Dreyfuss and Karloff story.
Oh, wow.
Well, there you go. Just to show you how fun. Dreyfuss would, you know, be at a con for mostly it's Jaws or Close Encounters that they know him for. And, you know, every actor could have a bad day and that type of thing. Or, you know, I always tell people that if you're doing cons, you should be there for the fans. So if you're coming in with anything else, go home. You know, so you're there for the people that are coming to see you, and it should be a great experience for both.
Yeah.
Well, apparently he may have not been having a good day. And I had seen him in the elevator. And, yeah, he was really annoyed about whether something his manager was doing or whatever, but he was not in a great mood. And I very rarely talk bad about anybody, so I'm not going to talk bad about him. That wasn't the case. It was just a bad day for him. So he was kind of rough around the edges, let's put it that way. And I went in, and I was doing a con, and it was next to me was Sarah Karloff, which Sarah Karloff is Boris Karloff's daughter. And I've known Sarah for 30 years. And, you know, that is class. Boris is the, like Vincent Price, is the ultimate horror star. Everything started with them outside of Chaney.
Yeah.
So they're royalty. In the horror world, they're royalty, you know. And they're, you know, either you have Bela Lugosi Jr. or you have Sarah, that's royalty. That's a royal family in the horror world.
Yeah.
So it was, I'm around Sarah's oldest son's same age. We're the same age. So a lot of people would see me with Sarah a lot, kind of thinking that I was her son. Anyway, so we always have this thing where we call it Karloff magic. And that means that if somebody finds out it's Boris Karloff's daughter, especially an actor, you know, doors have opened. So I told her that, if you know, Dreyfuss was in the other side of the building, you know, he's not having a good day, she never met him, you know, would he know, you know, can the Karloff magic work there? So I said, yeah, why don't you go over and try it? Now, again, he had a huge line. The managers were very nice to the people around them. And she walked over with a bodyguard. She's 83 now. So this is a couple of years back. And she walked over and she cut the line, basically. So the manager's looking at, who is this lady? You just dropped off all our other people. And he's looking at her like, who the heck are you? And she drops in front of Dreyfus, Karloff Entertainment, which is Boris's, you know, company. And all of a sudden, this man that was getting, you know, growling at people got up to her and goes, oh, Mrs. Karloff, I am a big fan. And he was just this gentle person bowing down to, because she's royalty, she's Karloff royalty. And that's how it works. So it was, and then when he left, it went right back to rah, 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 rah. You know? So she goes back and I'm at my table next to her and I said, so how'd it go? And so she goes, it went great. So, son. Yeah, mom. I need you to see if it works again. I'm like, okay. So I walk over and I go in front and I come around the line and cut the line again. Now, of course, he didn't know who I was. So at that point, it didn't matter. And I dropped the Karloff card. And I said, I wanted to thank you very much for being so nice to my mother. Boris Karloff was my grandfather. And he got right up and he goes, it's so nice to meet you. I've been a big fan of Boris Karloff. It's really a pleasure, the whole thing. So that's like a fun. And then later on, he finds out who I am. I said, no, but everybody thinks I'm her.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. So, that's Boris. So awesome, Bill.
So that's a cute little story. And
he I love really, that he comes across so like tightly wound, just like his character in What About Bob? And yeah, a lot of these.
I think, you know, sometimes people have hard, you know, a hard weekend. But he, on most part, I've got to know him after that. And he's much better. I think it just was a bad weekend. That's all.
He's a great actor too. I felt bad for him having to do that Chevy Chase movie that he just did, because it's just obvious that those two did not get along. So,
but well, that happens too. And I know Chevy. Chevy doesn't live too far from here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, God.
He lives in New York in the Hudson Valley. So I've been to his place a couple of times. He's a tall guy.
Yeah, is he tall? Yeah. Well, I figured you were talking about Pete Mayhew. He's tall too.
Well, Pete, I knew Pete. He was very tall.
That's Chewbacca, yeah. Guys. So.
You know, he was 7 foot. And then Spencer Wiles, a friend of mine who played Darth Vader, and he's, you know, 6'8". Wow. You know, and I had Spencer on one side and I have Felix Silla on the other side. So it's like, you know, Felix played Cousin Ed. And I knew Felix for, you know, 35 years. He would always come here and steal one of my Emmys. And we run out.
I hate when that happens.
And I go, Felix, that thing's bigger than you. Get it back here.
So are you looking forward to the Munsters redo from Rob Zombie?
Well, yeah. Butch was here right before the new year. I know Butch Patrick. I've known him for a long time. And Butch, we had the car here, the Munster car here for a while. I stored it for Butch when he was just in the area. And then he went over and took it over to Rob's and came back. Yeah, because Dan Roebuck and I, Dan's playing Grandpa, and Dan is a friend of mine, so I'm looking forward to Dan.
Matter good fact, actor, by the way.
We're talking about Aurora too. Dan, we recorded, maybe 10 years ago, and he had one of the ultimate Munster collections in his house.
Wow.
In LA. Wow. Huge Munster fan. Huge. And we have a lot of it on tape. So we're at his house filming, and he just, everything Munster, just loves it. Great actor, just loved it. And here he is now going to play Grandpa. So isn't that
that's great?
That's awesome. Nice. We had the pleasure of speaking to the director of one of his films, Penelope Spheris. So, and I mean, I like Dan. I like the stuff that he's in. It's funny, he's not one of those ones that you think that jumps out at you, but it's like everything that I've seen him in, I'm like, you know what, I like this guy, I gotta remember him. So
he's great. I mean, I always turned around when he was doing the series Lost. I said, are you
still exactly
lost? Are you not, you know, what are you doing? But we've had him do a number of things with, I've done a lot of stuff with him, and like I said, he's in that. If we ever release it, you'll see his collection. But again, to see him playing hit one of his idols, it's great.
Yeah, I remember seeing him play Jay Leno on The Late Shift, and I'm like, this guy is fantastic.
He needs to be in more stuff, and I hope this launches a lot more because he's a great talent.
Well, guys, that's our next guest. We got to get Dan Robuck on. that's awesome.
I don't know. I have to see because Rob Zombie is from Connecticut.
Yeah, actually, yeah. He used to rent from the Blockbuster I worked at in Plainville. So,
okay.
Nice.
Yeah, because that's where Sherry's from. So, you know, we knew them well. Then you talk about royalty. We did not. Whatever you need, sir. You know.
He's like, we didn't charge him the late fee.
No, definitely. Look. I'm not a magician. Okay.
It's funny because he's tall. He's tall. He's got to be at least 6'1". He's tall. He's thin. So, people are like, oh, well, is he too tall to be grandpa? But they don't realize that Al Lewis, and I knew Al because he didn't live far from here either, was tall too. You know, he was at least 6'1", 6'2". You know, it's because he was standing next to
Fred Gwynn, who's standing in platforms.
Yeah, so it and the little televisions kind of threw you off. So
that makes sense.
It's funny because we're doing a project right now we do a lot of stuff for the New York Yankees here. And I'm building and designing stuff. And one of the things I'm doing right now for the spring training is this thing with old TVs for all the players, and they're shipping in a whole bunch of old black and white televisions, and we've got a whole fleet of them here, and it's just so funny to see all the different sizes that were popular, 12 inch next to, the 6 inch next to, you had a black and white, and I remember my kids when they were they're in their 40s now, when they were kids, they got a TV from their grandfather, the first TV they had in their room. And I brought it up the stairs and put it in their room for them. And they started yelling downstairs, and TV the first day. So they were like 8 and whatever. And they're like, Dad, it's broke. Like, why is it broke? Broke. Right? We can't change the channels. There's no remote. I said, what do you mean? You have to get up and turn the knob, get out of your bed, turn it up. But it's still broke. Why? Because it's black and white. Well, it is a black and white, and that's all you get.
Man, I remember having the rabbit ears on that thing, and then when the knob broke off, you had to turn it with a pair of needle nose pliers. Yeah, absolutely.
I've got a bunch of them here now, so it's really kind of fun for us to beam these things up and looking at them.
Oh, geez, yeah. Nice. And you wonder, like, years and years, if it was just baking us and we're getting sunburned from all the radiation those things were kicking out,
That's no, no crazy. More than those phones you're playing with now.
Yeah, so. No, that's very true. Probably not, Yeah, that's so good. Guys, I didn't have any other questions for Bill. I didn't know if you had anything else you wanted to ask.
Just hearing all the awesome things you have, can we come take a tour?
It's going to take you a few hours.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think that would be a pleasurable few hours.
Just do you offer tours?
Oh, yeah, we do. If we know people when we're filming, or we have a lot of guests, even if actors are in the area, that they like to come and watch.
Cool. Yeah, and we're totally cool if like Chevy shows up, we'll totally be cool.
Yeah, like, Butch may drive in, but
I've met Butch a number of times. Like he's does the Chicago circuit out here all the time, and I did a panel and Matt was working it, and Justin at this Chicago Pop Culture Con that he was at. So it was right around the time I think he was doing the this was before he was doing the Butch Patrick roast, but he's just a really nice guy.
Oh no, Butch is great. I mean, he is a very talented guy, and I've known him for a long time, and he's a lot of fun. We have a great time together.
I love that kids like really connect with his character, and it's like little 7-year-olds talking to him about the Munsters, and it's like, dude, that was like before I was born.
Well, we built a couple of Butch Patrick or Eddie Munster puppets. He has one. There's a guy in Canada, and we're building actually all the Munsters as puppets, for these private collections right now. Butch has them, and then it's for these guys up in Canada.
That's so cool. I thought of one last question for you. Mm-hmm. Normally we do something called what was your weekend geek? What did you do? And yours might be actually a lot more interesting than ours, but what's something that this week you did that was particularly geeky?
That was particularly geeky this
week? Yeah. Yeah. Like it could be that, oh, I built a starship or something for a movie or, you know, like it could anything with you.
He's like every day.
You could say I walked over and picked up a VHS or Betamax copy of Fraggle Rock. It's like, all right.
I don't know really pretty much this week. I think the only time I really, really kind of geeked out, it wouldn't be does it have to be this week or could it
literally any time. So
one of the fun things for me that was great, I was doing a show in LA and they were promoting, it was at a con, they were promoting Who Was in the Room. And they did it like the old movie posters, like, you know, when actors, especially in the horror movies, it had all the actors' names listed with their photos. And the best one was where I walked into the room, it crossed the banner. It said Karloff, Lugosi, Diamond, Price, and Cheney.
Oh, wow.
Because my name was up there with all of theirs.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was a geek.
Yeah, I could imagine just like inside, like, oh my God.
Seeing it in print like that, it was kind of cool. Like
that's so cool. I'm
the horror movies.
that's awesome. I would probably freak out myself. So, but I want to thank you so much for joining us. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to pause here for us so we can pick this up after. We won't keep you any longer. So let me just pause the recording here.
Greetings, Spice fans. Silk City Hot Sauce is now sponsoring the Dorkening Podcast Network. Our craft sauces are made in Vermont in small, high-quality batches using locally sourced, farm-grown ingredients. Silk City Hot Sauce comes in a variety of heat strengths and killer flavors like Jezebel, Erotic Fever, Mango Madness, and Good Morning Jonestown. And don't forget our newest creation, Hot Syrup. Make no mistake, Spice fans, this is the queen of sweet heat. There's new and unique flavors coming out all the time. Best of all, right now, listeners of the Dorkening Podcast Network can go to silkcityhotsauce.com and use coupon code DORK. Not only will you get 20% off your order, we'll also throw in a free bottle of hot sauce. That's silkcityhotsauce.com. Coupon code DORK.
Rise and shine, my sinners. When Father Evil starts his day, he gets a little deadly. Deadly Grounds coffee has the richest, smoothest flavor you'll find anywhere. It's sinfully delicious. Once you go deadly, you never go back. Order yours at GetDeadly.com. Coffee's so good, it's scary.
We'll just recap.
Okay, so that was a hell of an interview, huh?
Yeah, it was awesome, dude.
Definitely, awesome interview. Definitely.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, it's did it not, like, Justin, did it seem like that's like future Matt's house?
I feel like that's future Geek Life HQ headquarters.
Oh yeah, that's dude. The real Geek Life HQ, you know, right, like, there.
In a future not too far away, when we have our offices that like all these other podcasters record at, that's what it's going to look like.
Are we going to haze people, do you think? But dude, like, no, you've got to sit next to Jake Paul.
That's awesome, dude. Like, too bad it isn't like a video. We don't do video, but like he said, that like, we should definitely go out there and make a point to, like you said, do a show there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be great.
That would be cool, dude. Seems like a very genuine dude. And like you said, he knows everybody. So it's just like, wow, dude.
All I know is as soon as he said Dark Crystal, I saw Justin's face.
I saw your boner.
I saw his, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like, yeah, we got the swords. And I'm like, holy shit! I'm like, oh, you mean the swords that they use for the trial against Stone? It's like, okay, yeah. I'm like,
he's like,
It's a good thing we don't have video because we got to see Justin's O face at that moment.
It's fucking geek.
Nah, I wasn't wearing a hat.
If it was definitely a Lonely Island moment where he's like, I jizzed
in my pants. Nice one. So let's wrap up then with our week in geek. Matt, why don't you go first? Because I know you got to bounce.
Yeah. So, I mean, what I do, I ordered, I found this like secret stash of like vintage shirts. And it's like basically you order like a box and you get like 10 to 15 shirts. So it's like almost like a mystery box, but the guy doesn't do it too much. And it's very like on a small scale. So I ordered two of these boxes and like, I didn't know what I was going to get. So I paid $210 and I got probably 24 shirts. And like, I was flipping through them and doing like every one of them. I was like, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit, holy shit. But like, I posted a few on Instagram and it's just like, it's true vintage shirts, you know, from the 70s and 80s and early 90s. So it was just like,
is that where you got that John Lennon and the Pink Floyd one?
No, I got those on a trade.
Oh, wow.
But this is like, I don't know if the guy, he obviously resells and he picks and things, but I don't know if this is stuff he just doesn't want to take his time to wash, because they were needed to be like OxyClean. Some of the white shirts were kind of yellow. Some of them had some flaws, some rips, but still, dude, bang for your buck with these, dude. Like I said, I spent like $210 and there's easily $1,000 worth of value there.
Wow.
Nice.
Oh yeah, dude. Like it's crazy, dude. It's like maybe just shit that this guy just doesn't have time for.
What sizes?
All over the, from small to double X, you know, Harley stuff. I had an old, Ronald Reagan booster shirt from the fucking 80s, dude.
Pins, those are big time, you know, collectibles too.
So I mean, I was geeking out hard over some of these shirts, and I love a good like vintage tag, dude. And all these shirts had cool vintage tags, and that's another reason why I kind of buy it, is to kind of do a little more research into actual vintage tags, the way they look, how they feel, how it's sewn. And just so, because I bought a fake shirt too on purpose, knowing it was fake, just to kind of see like what's being produced. It was a fake Guns N' Roses bootleg, actually.
Yeah. So we saw that one.
Yeah. The thing about that, it's got the old tag, but they're actually making new tags that look old, and they're making these fake tags. So it's just nice to see what actual tags look like.
You mean this is not European tour?
Right, dude. Yeah. It's spelled European wrong. Yeah. And like if you really want to get geeky, like Guns N' Roses wasn't even licensed to Giant in 95 to do a shirt on that tag. So you wouldn't even fucking have it. So it's just like, wow, all those puzzle pieces don't fit together if you're really geeking out. Yeah. You know, and in 95, that shirt probably wouldn't have been a single stitch shirt, because it would have been a more higher end double stitch on a, you know, because it's a big tour and a big band. You know,
they're doing a lot of tie dye at that point, I think, those guys.
I mean, yeah. So it's just crazy, dude. The shit people fucking try to pass off to make money on. And like, I've seen that same shirt sell for $175 on eBay.
Oh, wow.
Or more, you know, and just someone just got suckered. You know, they see the old tag and they've seen one old tag and they know, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy it. It's old tag.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I bought it, just to do the kind of legwork. You know, I spent $40 on the blank or on the bootleg, and it was well worth the $40, dude, just to learn about it, man. And then I'll be able to at least get my $40 back or more, you know.
Yeah, he's like, it's great to learn. I'm going to go to a show and flip it for $250.
No, I wouldn't do that. I would say, I just put an $80 price tag on it and say, hey, this is a modern bootleg made to look old. It's printed well. It's got single stitch, you know. So, and $80 isn't $250, and that's why somebody would buy it, you know. So whatever, dude. I'm not trying to make money on it. Like I said, I bought it to learn, you know.
Do you find yourself like adding any of these t-shirts to your repertoire, or are you just
A lot of the vintage stuff doesn't fit me, man. I'm in between an XL and a double X.
Yeah, I am so, too. Like, so
you can't really
lengthwise.
Yeah, lengthwise, dude. Yeah. But you can't really go by the sizes, because like, old shirts are smaller than newer shirts, you know. And if it's an extra large from the 80s, it's not going to be, it's more like a large or like a medium.
So you're saying people have gotten fatter?
Well, I mean, shirts of this guy, yeah, I guess that would be.
I mean, I don't fit into any shirts that I wore in the 80s. So,
but yeah, I mean, I basically go by measurements now. Like, I know my pit to pit on a shirt, like what feels good. And I know the length I like. So I just, when I buy a shirt, I measure, and if it doesn't fucking, and you can stretch shirts too now, like a vintage shirt, you can like stretch it out. You can gain like 2 or 3 inches, you know.
What else like can you stretch?
You know, your dick.
Oh, I mean, I was thinking hats, but okay.
Oh, hats, like, you know.
Usually when really. I stretch that, I lose 2 to 3 inches.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well. Like buttholes, you know, like.
You stretch those. What else, Greg?
Yeah. I have a butthole, Greg. Can you stretch me?
I don't think this is the same movie.
Well, I mean, it's still Meet the Fuckers.
No. Yeah, oh, yeah. Okay. It is the right movie.
It's Fuck the Meters.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your last name is Meter, and you fuck them.
Your name is Gaylord Meter.
Yeah. Here's my butthole. Can you milk it?
Thanks.
On that note, dude, yeah, so I geeked up pretty hard on some shirts, man.
That's great. Mine's pretty easy. I'll go. I watched all of Cobra Kai yesterday, literally. Jesus. Just the whole day, watched the whole thing. And I did the Lego Baby Yoda the child set, so it took me about 4 hours to do both, so you know.
Nice. Nice,
dude, that's fun, dude. I mean, how many pieces was that?
1,000 or some odd, like, yeah. Maybe like 1,500 pieces. So
you get it for Christmas?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. It was about a $40 Lego set. Got it for a Christmas gift and put it together. It looks great.
I want to get the heads, the Boba Fett head.
The helmets. Yeah.
I'm with you on that. Those things look great. They have the Adam West Batman helmet sort of mask. And I'm like, that one looks pretty sick. And, you know, there's like a Venom and a Carnage that look cool, but you know, it's tough with Legos because you never know where to put them and what do you do with them? Do you take them apart if you want to store them?
Legos are so fucking expensive, dude.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just like, and Legos don't lose their value either.
They do not. They're like Toyotas.
Seriously, dude.
Like, literally, it's a Toyota.
Fucking buy Legos, keep the box, keep the instructions, and when you fucking put it away, fucking put it back in that box, and you can get your money back, dude. Guaranteed. Yeah. Or more, you know.
I saved every little plastic package because now they have barcodes on them, like the USB code or whatever like that you scan with your phone. It'll tell you what pieces are supposed to be in there. USB.
Oh, nice. USB. See, that's going for collectors. That they're guaranteed. That's the fucking perfect thing for that company to do is that, dude. Like, hey, we know you're going to save this. We made it 10,000 times easier. Because it says this now, dude. Fucking good for Lego, dude. Stepping it up, dude.
I could probably put each individual piece back in the particular bag and you know, just say, okay, it's used, and like 3 years from now I'll sell it for $80.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get a food sealer and re-vacuum pack it all.
Yeah, dude.
What do you mean, get one? No, it's
I re-seal my food all the time, asshole.
Yeah. I mean, what are you talking about? Got a pack of Doritos from the 80s. Well, what about you, Justin? What'd you do this week?
I actually haven't done a lot because I've been adulting, and that's no fun or geeky, so I haven't really done a lot. But I would like to say rest in peace, Rob Bruce.
Yeah, it's sad.
Yeah, the pop culture world lost a big one there.
How old was he?
I don't. Let me look it up real quick. I don't actually know. I know they said they found him at his storage unit.
Damn it, dude.
Justin, is that like a grim view of your future?
I hope not.
That's my fucking future, dude.
Yeah, you too, Matt.
Rob Bruce.
By a giant statue.
Rob Bruce was 62.
Jesus, dude.
Wow.
He was what? Damn, dude. That's sick, dude.
Well, they said that he was actually probably living out of his storage unit at the time, so.
What happened with him, dude?
I don't know. I didn't read the whole. I just saw
he probably couldn't afford rent and to pay for like his collectibles. So I guess this is a grim view into my future.
So, like, was Kevin Smith just like cutting him some slack by letting him be on the show, dude?
I guess so.
Fucking A, because it seems like he knew a bunch about everything, man.
Yeah, pretty much. Because they said his office was the storage unit, but they said he might have been living out of it at the time.
Wow.
Man, yeah, rest in peace, dude. Hopefully.
Did they say if he what he died of, or
I haven't seen anything as of yet. I just saw that they said he was missing for like 7 days, and then his family went to the storage unit and found him.
Oh, wow.
Bummer, dude. Way to bring it down, dude.
Yeah, well, you know,
you guys asked how and where.
Well, I mean, we'd also talk about Betty White, who we loved. Betty White.
Yeah, Betty White. But she,
you
she
know what,
it,
dude?
She made it to 99.
You don't have to say anything about her because she lived a long life, dude. She did. She did everything you could possibly do, and she probably died happy.
You guys ever find her attractive on the Golden Girls?
Yeah,
I'd say she's the best one on Golden
Girls. Put her in a Bugs Bunny outfit. I mean,
yeah. I don't know. I was a Dorothy guy.
You love Blanche.
That's the really old one, right?
Yeah, no, that was Sophia. So.
Oh, no, hey. I heard you could polish her fucking doorknob, dude.
Wow, that's awesome. But
her Geritol?
Yeah, she, obviously.
She whacked me off with Ben Gay, so it lasts long.
That sounds horrible. What kind of hat are you wearing then? This one.
Well, she once gave Charlie Chaplin a hand job.
Grandma's boy. Nice. On that note, we won't keep you any longer. Thank you, everybody. Check us out on @GeekLifeHQ on Twitter, @GeekLifeHQ, starring Mel Gobson, on Instagram, GeekLifeHQ, at Facebook, or GeekLifeHQ.com. Send us something. We haven't heard from you guys in a while. We want to talk about Ghostbusters and some shit.
Yeah, leave a voicemail or visit Matt on his OnlyFans page.
There's still
Matt
like
takes a shit after he interviews.
There's still like 12 of you that listen to the podcast, so we know you're there.
Yeah, I can see you
fucking listening.
Shout out to our other listeners, Daryl, Josh. Thanks, guys. Mom,
Stacy, Mario, Frank, Jeff.
Mario listens? Yeah. Really? we'll see you next time, guys.
All right, later.
Are you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle comic books? Then Epic Tales from the Sewers is a podcast for you. We cover the comic books, video games, movies, cartoons, and anything else turtle related. We talk about the toys, we talk about the cereal, we talk about all the fun things about turtles that we love so much. So give a listen. You can find us on iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and more. Check out Epic Tales from the Sewers, part of the Epic Airways podcast network. Give a listen, dudes. Cowabunga is this podcast for you.